This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and I'm very excited about this show today. I'm joined by author, actress, speaker, and creativity and productivity specialist, Sam Bennett. Don't worry, I'm going to tell you about what a productivity specialist is in a moment. But before we meet her, let me tell you a little bit more about Sam Bennett. She is the author of Get It Done, Start Right Where You Are, and most recently, The 15-Minute Method, The Surprisingly Simple Art of Getting It Done. She is the founder of TheRealSamBennett.com, a company committed to helping overwhelmed creatives, I can't relate to that at all, and frustrated overachievers get unstuck. Sam is a popular course instructor at LinkedIn Learning, with over a million class participants worldwide. Wow. She lives in Connecticut, and you can find her online at TheRealSamBennett.com. Sam Bennett, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much, Judy. Thanks for having me. Hi, everybody.
I have to tell you, your resume alone is so impressive. Just very briefly, just for our listeners who are wondering what it means, very briefly, what's a productivity specialist?
All I can think is, we all have dreams and projects we want to do, and we all put off doing them. And that's what I want. I want people to get their stuff done, the stuff that matters to them, whatever that is. So there's no real, if you look up, you know, productivity specialist in the yellow pages or try to major in college, it's not going to happen. It doesn't exist. I pretty much made it up, but that's what it's about.
That's so cool. And also, you are a popular course instructor on LinkedIn Learning with over a million class participants worldwide. Like, that's extremely cool. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it happened during pandemic. A production company nearby where I was living in California reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we've seen your YouTube videos. You're great. Would you be interested in doing content for like LinkedIn Learning, Udemy, some other online learning platforms? And I was like, yeah, sure. Sounds great. And we just started doing these trainings. And the most popular one is called How to Stop Wasting Time in Meetings.
Wow.
The next most popular one is called How to Write Emails People Want to Read. And then the rest of them are a lot of like time management for busy people, getting things done ahead of deadlines, a lot of this creativity, productivity stuff. But it's been a wonderful collaboration with this production company called Madecraft, and it blows my mind. I mean, I get pinged every day from people all over the world.
That's awesome.
Hello, I'm a data scientist in Mumbai, and this really helped me. Hi, I'm a writer in Arizona, and this really helped me. I'm like, it's the best ever.
Joyful, joyful.
So joyful.
And I'm not surprised because the book is just chock full of so many goodies. I have to say goodies because they really are. I have about 50 questions. I know we won't get to them all. So I already know that I'm going to want you back on again. But anyway, welcome. Congratulations on the book. It's so inspiring and beautiful. And I even love that right off the top, you asked the reader very early on in the book to come up with five things that they can do in 15 minutes. And it got me thinking about, I know it's going to sound silly, but weights, yoga, meditation, a little bit of singing like my daughter, and starting my book. Can you tell us more about your brainchild, the 15-minute method, and what inspired you to write it?
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, it's not my idea. Lots of people have talked about this time blocking of 15 minutes. And I started years ago talking about it. And it was just one of a lot of tools I would offer people. But over time, I noticed how incredibly effective it is. And as people get more and more overwhelmed and more busy and more dragged and more hamster wheel and more, oh God, no, you know, not again, yeah. I can't. And finding themselves, even when they do have time for themselves, spending that time scrolling, spending that time stressing, spending that time not doing things that are relaxing and restorative. So I started to tell people, look, just you get everything done for everybody else all day. Take 15 minutes a day for you. Right. For something that matters to you. And I don't care if it matters to anyone else or not. I don't care if it's for your betterment or not. just something that you would not normally do, but that you would really like to do. And so whether that's a prayer and meditation practice or singing or working on your book or just sitting out in the garden with the sun on your face or reaching out to a friend or clearing some clutter, whatever it is, and whatever it is, 15 minutes a day, every single day. And it sounds so simple, and the effect is exponential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's incredible. You even, and you know, for anyone, I don't know, as a life coach, one of the questions that I hear all the time is, I don't know. I don't know what I would do, or I don't know what my purpose is, or I don't know this, I don't know that. And so you help people know, because you have a fabulous list in the book of 52 things that you can do in those 15 minutes, 52 examples of things you can do for people who don't know.
Absolutely.
What are some of your favorites? What are some of the popular ones?
I love cloud watching.
Right? Wow.
Something we used to do as kids and we never do anymore. It's like, yeah, just sit somewhere outside and watch the clouds for 15 minutes. See what happens, you know? It reminds me of those long car trips we used to take as kids, you know, in the way back of the Volvo, right? Just staring at the sky for hours.
Yeah.
And even things that, you know, and some people are very clear, like, oh, I would really love to write a book, but, you know, I don't know what it should be, or if it should be a memoir or this or that. It's like, no, don't worry about what it should be. Just start writing. And when you write every single day, if you write for 15 minutes, you can write about 250 words-ish. And if you do that every day without too much editing of yourself, in 400 days, you've got 50,000 words. That's a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, quit trying to overthink it and just get into it and see what happens. And, you know, I offer a thing. I have this is how into this I am. I offer a thing called the Daily Practicum, and this is all it is. It's a subscription thing. I think people pay, I don't know, maybe $100 a month or something to log in every weekday at 12 noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. We log in, we say hi, we do a little quick breathing exercise. I turn on the timer. 15 minutes later, I turn the timer off. And people look up to me with this like post-orgasmic glow about them.
And
every single time they're like, oh my gosh, I cleared this much from the pile that's this high. I called that person I've been putting off calling for 6 weeks. I worked on my needlepoint. I texted my grandchildren. I, you know, whatever it is, relationship building. I sang, I meditated, I breathed, I stared at a blank piece of paper for 15 minutes. 15 minutes of enforced boredom is not going to hurt a
Brilliant.
Person.
Like, Brilliant.
It's so amazing how much you can get done in 15 minutes. People always underestimate. They're like, wow, I got a lot done. I'm like, yeah, I know, because you're focusing.
Awesome.
And how much 15 minutes every day and every day for a week, a month, a year, 6 years, 60 years.
Brilliant.
It can really have an impact on your life.
You're creating a safe space. You're giving people permission to do it. And I think there's also something so interesting about you watching them do it, because people don't feel as alone in the rowboat. I think it's just like you're shadowing them and people feel, I've got my buddy with me. It's not so hard. It's quite brilliant.
Thank you. It's, you know, we're tribal animals. We forget that. We are pack animals. We like to live in a group. We like to live very close to each other. It's unusual for a mammal as big as we are to like to live so closely with other very big mammals. Most big mammals like a little space. But no, we're like, no, we want to live together. We want to live in buildings. We want to live in cities. We want to watch each other. We want to movie with each other, talk about each other. We want to watch each other through the windows. We're fascinated. So we do better in a group, even if we wish everybody else would go away, which
we all do. It's a dichotomy always, right?
Right. Exactly. But particularly, but there is something about knowing that you're in a group, knowing that it's on your calendar. That makes a big difference. Knowing that, you know, mommy will see you. There's that element of it too. And especially for people who are neurospicy in whatever way, particularly ADD, ADHD.
Right. You talk about that in the book. Yes.
Yeah. It's sometimes called parallel play or body doubling. The same, just being in a room with other people who are working, even if it's a virtual room, makes an unbelievable difference.
Absolutely. Brilliant. So I have a question for you. Did you adopt the 15 minute a day method to write this last book?
I did. I had to. The last 2.5 years, I have had long haul COVID.
Oh, I read about that. Yes. Oh. Awful, awful.
Shout out to my fellow long haulers out there and anybody really with an invisible disease. One of the long haul can show up as a different disease in different people, which is one of the reasons why it can be hard to treat. But it has a lot in common with chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah.
Or I think it's also called myalgic encephalomyelitis or something. That's probably not how you say it. Something like that, which is also understudied. So they don't really have a solution for that either. But it's the degree of fatigue like we need another word. It's not, yeah. It's not just like, oh, I'm tired and then I take a nap and then I get, then I'm rested. No, you're
it's
never rested.
Deep, abiding, exhausted fatigue times 1,000. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's like you're made out of concrete and someone is holding you down.
So did you find that the choice of when to do the 15 minutes was important in terms of when is the most awake and alive and ready am I during the day for that 15 minutes to maximize it to the full?
Both. Yes. Sometimes I'm often, you know, better sort of midday, you know, mornings could be tough, afternoons could be tough, but midday was not bad. There's also sometimes right after sunset where I can get a little wave of energy. So I learned to definitely take advantage of those. I also learned to sort of baby myself and say, look, write for 15 minutes. If that's all you do, then that's all you do. Yeah. And if you sit down for 15 minutes and get up 2 hours later, fantastic. But that doesn't always happen. And really, it's just like I tell everybody else, it hopscotches right over my perfectionism, right over my self-doubt, right over, I'm like writing and I'm like, this is terrible. It's like, right, but it's only for 15 minutes and you're going to do it again tomorrow. So don't fret, you know, just get it on
paper. Just keep going. Do you feel that part of the writing for 15 minutes, getting that engine going, as it were, in fact, propels you to do more than the 15 minutes?
Absolutely. Or is that not? Absolutely. And also the body is a pleasure-seeking mechanism, you know? I mean, writers are particularly like this. Well, I think all highly creative people are like, we love to write, but we hate to sit down to write.
Right.
We like it when we're in it and we're doing it, but the getting ready to do it is just
hard.
Miserable.
Hard.
So
I get it.
That too, that like just, and really making it a non-negotiable for myself. Like, even if you sit there for 15 minutes.
The blank page, even if it's a blank page and you have one word like help, at least you're honoring that time and it will come.
And that thing of like just showing up to the project every day, touching the project every day. Your brain sort of starts to noodle on it. You know, it's like, it becomes more and more present for your life. It also helped that I had a contract and a deadline.
Nice. Thanks, New World.
Thanks, New World
Thanks,
Library.
New World Library. And Kim Corbin and everyone. You call it something else in the book. As a coach, I call it the inner critic. Mm. But people have so many reasons and excuses of why they don't do it. And we all do this, right? What are some of the most common ones and how can we combat them and help get people into that place of action and flow? I mean, is it doing the 15-minute exercise? What are the things we can tell ourselves when we say, I can't? I'm not good enough. I'm not this enough. I'm not that enough. It'll never be good enough. It'll never be. What's the point of writing the book or doing the singing or doing the thing? It's not going to work. Right. What do you say to that?
So I think the magic of an interesting life comes when we take advantage of the creative dichotomies in life, right? And sort of push them closer together. So I don't want to write and I have to write. And we push these things closer together, like two little energy balls. And there's like this tension and we sort of start to surf the tension back and forth. You know, on the one hand, I really care about what everybody thinks about me and I don't want to fail. And I certainly don't want to fail publicly. And on the other hand, I don't really care what anybody has to say.
I don't care.
Right? I don't care. So we move these things closer and closer together till there's some energy between them and then surf that energy, right? So it's not one thing or the other. It's not I'm great or I suck. It's like, I'm great and I suck all at the same time.
Oh, I love, I have to tell you, Sam, that and but thing in your book, it's not but, it's and. I mean, this would be a good time to just extrapolate on that as well. Like, that was so powerful when I read it. It's not like I've never heard that expression, but somehow the way you wrote it really resonated.
Well, and things have their moment, right? Sometimes we hear things 100 times and then the 101st time we go, oh, is that what that means? Oh my gosh, you know, why didn't I say? Like, no, people have been telling you for years. So you get that critical voice in your head that says you're too fat, you're too old, no one cares, this is stupid, who do you think you are, don't get too big for your britches, all that noise. And we all have it. By the way, P.S. by the way, everyone has that voice.
Yes.
I've worked with Academy Award winners, Emmy Award winners, rich people, famous people, doesn't matter. Everybody has that voice. Everybody over the age of 7 has that voice. So it's not that interesting, among other things. It's because it just says the same thing over and over again.
Right.
It's just trying to keep you safe. It thinks somehow it's keeping you safe, like an overprotective parent at the playground. Don't go up too high. Don't do this. Careful. Don't swing. Don't jump. Don't. No, it's like, okay, thank you for trying to keep me safe. Really, I can swing and jump. That's okay. And I find that honestly, I mean, I offer a couple of strategies to deal with that voice, but sometimes just going, okay, thank you. Yes, I may suck and I may be too old and no one may care. And I'm going to sit down and do my 15 minutes anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely brilliant. I love it. So you say that overwhelm seems like an outside problem, but it's actually an inside problem. Can you tell us more about overwhelm? Because we all have it. Yes. I really have had it in the last 24 hours, but funnily now with you, I'm sort of, that overwhelm is just dissipating. It's quite lovely. And the book and you are helping.
Good. But, yes. I would like to dispel overwhelm. Yeah. So there's this myth about overwhelm, right? That, and you hear it, I hear it all the time. You probably do too, as from my clients and students, like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm spinning so many plates. I'm trying to put, 5 pounds of sugar into a 4 pound bag. I'm so overwhelmed.
Yes.
And I just want to say, first of all, stop saying that. Mm-hmm. Along with you're too busy. Stop saying it.
No complaining, you say.
No complaining.
Which is really good.
Knock it off. No one cares.
Because we do it. Just don't. No one cares. Don't complain. Don't blame. Don't complain.
Right.
It's so true.
Right.
Right.
How are you? Fulfilled. How are you? Going from lily pad to lily pad. I mean, there's a thousand ways to talk about having a full hectic life without making it sound like it's punishment. Right. Mm-hmm. So drop the word busy, drop the word overwhelm. And yeah, overwhelm is an inside problem. The world does not overwhelm you. You overwhelm you. And I think a lot of times we do it when it feels sort of like everything's coming at us at the same level of intensity and we can't tell what's most important.
Yes.
Right? Oh, my email's pinging. Oh, and now this text is pinging. And oh, I've got to respond to that thing. And oh, the birthday party's this weekend. And oh, this and that. Like, la, la, la.
Five people want me right now.
Right.
With equally good reasons, Right. Yeah, it's
so you need to get a little bit more in the driver's seat about your time, right? And just for those of you, I can feel some people might be sort of dragging their feet, like going, like, I think it's an outside problem. I think it's my life that's overwhelming me. I don't think it's me. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing: we see people for whom their job is to be overwhelmed,
right?
People who work in the emergency room, people who are first responders, people who work in animal rescue, people who work in social services, like they are. People who work in auctioneering, like people, there's all kinds of people who live in overwhelming circumstances. Are they overwhelmed? No.
No. They're calm as anything.
They're calm. Most of them have a great, if slightly dark, sense of humor. They're, they're moving through it. They're dealing with it. It's not, it's their job. They do it the same way you do your job, right? Yeah. So it is not the outside circumstances, no matter how sad or difficult those outside circumstances may be that are overwhelming you. It's you. Brilliant. So you get back in the driver's seat of your life.
You get back in the driver's seat. It's so powerful. You also are a big person to talk about perfectionism and not how we all have it. But you have, your book really helps us defeat that because you have a list of all the words that you should be vying for that have nothing to do with the word perfect. Words like magic, sexy. It was such a great list. I love that list. You know why? Because it didn't say beautiful on it, and it didn't say perfect on it, and it didn't say, it was just all the other words. It's such great creative words. Can you tell us about that list? I love magic especially, but all of them are great.
Of course. Of course. I think, this myth of perfectionism, I would just love to just burn it right down. Because when you think about your favorite book, the one you've reread, or your favorite movie, the one that you watch, no matter how many times it's on, you're like, oh, it's on. I got to watch it. Right.
Yeah.
Or your favorite piece of music. Do you love that book, movie, or music because it's perfect?
No.
No. And in fact, my favorite books and my favorite movies would not end up in any, wouldn't even end up on these 10 best lists. Like some of them are kind of terrible. Like, I am a huge, I'll come out right now. I don't think I've ever said this publicly before. I am a massive Judith Krantz fan. I have reread, Judith Krantz wrote big potboiler soapy novels in the 80s. And I cannot get enough of them. I just think they're divine.
And Judith Krantz.
Yeah, Judith Krantz.
Nice.
And more to the point, the people that we love. Do you love the people that you love because they're perfect people?
No. You just love them. Yeah.
You love them because they're messed up and weird and wonky and goofy and half-baked and screwy, right?
You're so right.
Rather than putting all this emphasis of like, oh, I have to do this so that it's perfect, what's a more interesting word? What's a more interesting goal?
Lovely.
That we can actually, first of all, achieve, and second of all, enjoy more, I don't want this to be perfect. I want it to be fun. I don't want this to be perfect. I want it to be heartfelt. Yeah. I don't want this to be perfect. I want it to be magic. I want there to be room for magic in it. Like, what's more important to you than perfect? And lead with that. Lean into that.
It's brilliant. I'm going to share very quickly my two completely diametrically opposed favorite book and favorite movie. Favorite book, Jane Eyre. Favorite movie, Monster-in-Law. Very different.
You are my kind of person. Yes, Jane Eyre. Oh my gosh, I loved reading that book. And I've never seen Monster-in-Law, but now I'm going to have to put it on my list.
Oh, you got to see it.
J-Lo, I have a friend who's in it, actually. Yeah.
Gosh, that's very cool. I really love that. What is this cool concept in your book, The Zone of Creative Genius, all about? It sounds so enticing.
Well, I partly borrowed it from Gay Hendricks, who wrote The Big Leap, which if you have not read The Big Leap, read The Big Leap. Mm. The Big Leap is about your upper limit problem. When sometimes you try to do something big and you sort of self-limit and, you know, don't quite get there. But we can see that everyone has a particular zone of creative genius. Mm-hmm. Again, if we go back to who we are as tribal animals, if we were living in a group of, 22 people or something, we would see that there are some people who have an inclination towards being healers, and there's people who have an inclination towards taking care of the children. And there's people who have an inclination towards going and seeing what's on the far side of that hill, right? Mm-hmm. We all have our, and you think, oh yeah, no, you go do the far side of the hill thing. I don't want to do that, but I'll do this, right?
Right.
And it fascinates me, this thing, that everybody has this thing. And so many people have a zone of creative genius that is completely unrelated to their family, to their upbringing. They're like, no, I grew up in Akron, Canton, Ohio. And all of a sudden, the first time I heard about Zen Buddhism, I knew that was my thing. Yeah. You're like, really? Yeah. Amazing. The first time I saw the ballet, I thought, I have to do that. The first time I saw Monty Python, I thought, I have to have a career in sketch comedy.
Yes.
The first time I saw this kind of sculpture, this kind of whatever, I just knew that was for me. I wanted to work on the space station. I knew. I love that. I love it when people say that. I was like, really? That's amazing.
Oh, I know.
So you have this, and if you're not sure what yours is, because we can get a little blind to our own, it's the thing that if somebody came and woke you up at 3 a.m. and was like, hey, a bunch of us are going to go da-da-da, you would be like, oh, yeah, where are my shoes? I'm coming to be there. There is something that,
you don't care. You're there.
Right.
So I understand that.
Right. So if you don't know what to spend your 15 minutes on, start with that.
Yeah.
Because it lights you up. You're naturally good at it. You have a natural interest in it. It's easy for you. Right. Yes. So lean into those things. And you may have multiple, highly creative people have multiple zones of creative genius. We're good at a lot of things, which sometimes makes it seem like we don't know how to choose or we're dilettantes or something. You're not. You're just good at a lot of things. It's not a character defect. You're fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is going to look like I'm just diverting a little bit, but I love your statement. You have all these what ifs and these statements and these quotes and even these poems in the book that are so beautiful and powerful. And I love your statement. What if you were as kind to yourself as you are to everyone else? And you suggest this beautiful 15-minute experiment whereby you override negative programming in the following way. You suggest people spend 15 minutes writing down 15 pieces of positive feedback they've received. And this surprised me, this next bit, that you suggest they do it for 90 days straight.
Yeah.
Wow. So can you tell us more about the value of this and what feedback you've heard from people who've done it, including yourself? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll hear more about how to give yourself positive feedback. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. And I'm here with Sam Bennett. And I was just wondering what people have said it feels like when you tell yourself 15 pieces of positive feedback every day for 3 months.
Yeah. So we are, again, part of our programming is we're slightly negatively programmed, right? It is more important for our brain to remember that one berry that made us sick than it is to remember the 99 delicious berries. Mm-hmm. It's more important for us to remember the behavior that got us disapproved of, got us a raised eyebrow, got us punished, than it is for us to remember the behavior that is just generally sort of acceptable or even extraordinary, right?
Yes.
So that's not low self-esteem. That's just survival mechanism, right? So we have a tendency to sort of ignore the positive feedback. So I want to sort of grab your head and redirect it to the 99 delicious berries. Let's spend some time remembering all the things that you have done and done well.
Yes.
And I don't care who said it. I don't care what you thought they meant by it. I don't care what you thought they wanted from you when they said it. Okay. Just keep a running list. And especially for those of us with social anxiety, which I know I don't seem like this kind of person, but I am. I am tremendously shy and really? I am tremendously introverted. Mm-hmm. So I have used this list, this keeping a running list of compliments, whether they're ones I remembered or ones that people say. And I've like read it in my car before an audition before I go into a party or before I go in to speak. Because part of our anxiety is like, I don't know what they're going to think of me. But then if we look at the list and go, okay, well, overwhelmingly, people seem to find me sort of friendly and kind of funny and nice. And, you know, people say like, oh, you look nice. You write it down. Looks nice.
Great.
Well, that's an interesting thing to say. Says interesting things. Just notice what is, and you'll notice that the same words pop up over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start to go, oh, this is what people rely on me for. These are the things that I do naturally. You know, everybody goes, oh my gosh, that was so kind of you. And you're like, I just thought of, you know, just seemed normal. Like, no, but on the spectrum. So for you, it's just normal. For everybody else, kindness might be part of your zone of creative genius.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And wonderful. I'll go one step more. For those of you who are solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, or just in a corporate world in which your personal branding matters, when you start to find the 3 to 5, 7 words that crop up over and over and over again, that's your personal brand.
Nice.
Lean into that.
Oh, that's so good. There's so many, like the one you've just said, wonderful coach-like moments in the book that are so uplifting, like what you've just talked about. And I also love when you talk about how important it is to stop being so reactive to everyone else and just approach challenges as you write, and I quote, with good humor, good patience, empathy, curiosity. You talk about when you disagree with someone, say, that's interesting. Tell me more about why you believe that. And when you do that, even though you may still disagree, you now share a desire to understand the other person, which builds bridges. Oh, like this stuff is like golden.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about this wonderful style of communication and this wonderful way of thinking, really?
Yeah, and maybe it's my theater background, you know, playing all kinds of different characters and really having to find the truth of them inside of myself, right? I've played some horrible people, but you can't hate your own character when you're playing her. You have to figure out, why is this person being like
this? What's good in her? Yeah, of course.
What's good in her? What is she? You know, sometimes I would, because I'm very tall, so sometimes I would get cast as like an authority figure who's meddling. Well, let me fix that for you. Let me do that. Let me get out of the way. But I don't like meddling. That's not something but I do like being helpful.
Yeah.
So if I think of it as like helpful dialed up to 11,
yes.
No, actually, let me just help you. I'll just help you. No, let me just quit wiggling. I'll help you. I go, oh, okay. Now I can see why this character would be this way and why she thinks it's okay. So this natural empathy for human behavior and understanding that no human behavior is actually unknowable or even, and this is a little radical, unforgivable. Mm-hmm. So rather than see the people with whom you disagree, with whom you violently disagree, who are behaving in ways that you think are unacceptable. Okay, fine. You have that judgment. Sure. But now let's get a little bit more curious.
Yeah.
Why are they being like that? Why does it bother you so much? What rule of yours are they breaking? And can you find it inside of yourself? I often will find myself looking at people, sometimes people who are much older than I am. I can look at them and go, oh, there I am. There I am right now. There I am 30 years from now. I look at toddlers screaming in the supermarket and I think, oh God, there I am. Yes.
There I am.
I too.
And I feel for the mom and I feel for the kid. I remember being that. But you know what touched me so deeply in the book was you writing about your father.
Oh.
Who you said was critical, but that was his love language you described it as. And I love that because that's not one of the 5 love languages, but it could be a 6th. Because that was his maybe anxious way of trying to help you be your best self, because he loves you so much and loves you so much that he just wanted to get in there and help you be your best self.
That's right.
And so that scene in the book where he goes through that whole litany of things and then you go, I love you, Dad.
Yeah. My father, I grew up in a compliment-free environment. And my father is very critical of everyone and everything 100% of the time.
Yes.
It was the only way he knew how to move through the world. And yeah. He just had his red pen out and clicked for everything. That garden shouldn't have that many flowers. This person shouldn't be like this. Why is this toast over brown? This blah, blah, blah. It was exhausting. Right. My sisters and I would joke about how, like, well, I got Dad a present, but I know he's not going to like it. Like, it's guaranteed he's going to find something wrong with it. And his highest praise was, well, that's not too bad, is it? Mm-hmm. When I booked my first guest starring role on the Drew Carey Show in Hollywood, that's not too bad, is it? No, Dad.
That's huge, though. But that was huge. See, that for him was, that's an Oscar, that's an Academy Award.
Right. And it took me years to figure that out. I mean, I spent years just being hurt and disappointed until finally I realized, wait a minute, he does this with everyone. And he genuinely did think he was helping. He genuinely did think, like, there is a right way to do things, and I'm going to give you all the advice. And if you do things right, then everything's going to be okay. It's like perfectionism gone crazy. And right before he died, we had this afternoon where he just would not stop. He was going after, like, decisions I had made 40 years ago, old boyfriends, ex-husbands. He's going after my sisters. And then he starts in on my weight, which he's always had a big thing about my weight. And I finally started pretending that I was in a Star Trek episode. You know how they have those, like, I don't know, like transponders in their head that they can understand all alien language. So I was pretending he's speaking an alien language. And what he's actually saying is, I love you. What he's actually saying is, I love you. And so he's just blasting all this vituperative, judgy, mean. My father could be mean stuff, because he was really smart. So he could be mean strategically, like he was precision meanness. And I just kept thinking, he's trying to tell you he loves you. He's trying to tell you he loves you. And so, I just sat there and he's going on and on about my weight. And he finally wrapped up by saying, well, at least you aren't Walmart fat.
Yeah.
And I said, that was beautiful. I love you, Daddy.
Yeah.
He was terrible, but he was ours, you know?
Yeah. Messy and complicated, but he was yours.
That's right.
And he loved you. And that was his love language. And what a healthy way of seeing it and interpreting it. What a healthy thing you do.
Well, and this is where a million hours of personal development work really comes into play. You know, there's a lot of us who go to workshops and watch webinars and read books, and that's all great. But you got to put it into practice. Like, the real benefits come when you actually do it, when the rubber really hits the road, when somebody's really getting on your nerves, when you are really in crisis, when your feelings are really hurt. That is when you need to up your game, find your center, do your breathing, remember your love and compassion, remember, you know, I don't know how many people walk out of a meditation workshop and then get in their car and start screaming at traffic. It's like, y'all.
You got
to keep going. You got to keep doing the hard part.
You got to keep doing the hard part. There are lines in the book that made me weep because they were so simple and profound. And I loved when you said, what if your legacy is kindness? Mm. And I just think that's so much what it's all about. I even feel like that's what this show is all about. Mm. Can you tell us more about what made you write that?
I think a lot about legacy. I think particularly as a woman who wasn't able to have children, I don't know if I think about it more than other people, but I definitely think about it. And I think about, well, what would I like people to say about me 10 minutes after I die? What would I like them to say about me 10 years or 100 years or 1,000 years after I die? Can I do something that would have that much generational impact? And of all the things that people could say about me, I would love it if it was, she was kind.
I bet they will. I know they have, and I bet they will. You also have these great truisms, universalities about all people, that people are more alike than they are different. Mm. And you write things like, we want to love and be loved. We want for our work to matter. We want for our children to succeed and be happy. Like, it's just all so true. We want to eat good food and laugh at good jokes. We grieve. We're humbled. We find delight in the smallest of details. Yeah. Just that list. Like, it's just, I can't explain it. The tone, the choice of the words is exquisite. And they're all so true. And I think you're right. Everyone wants that.
Absolutely. And next time you start to feel like, oh, those people, you know, whoever those people are to you, right? The political party with whom you disagree, the country that you believe is behaving poorly, the whatever it is, the person in the cubicle next to you at work that you disapprove of. Remember, again, we all want the same things. And the only way to move forward in any conflict or disagreement is to find the place where you are on the same side.
Yes.
To be on the same team.
Yes.
Right? So you're way over there holding that position, and I'm way over here holding this position. But the thing we have in common is we would like to reach a resolution.
Yes.
Or the thing we have in common is we would like to understand each other better. Or the thing we have in common is we would like this meeting to be as short as possible. Or the thing,
whatever
it is that we have in common. And to remember just, and the quickest way for me to do that is, like I said, just to remember the base humanity of people. And if you, you know, ask them who's your favorite family member or what do you love to eat around the holidays or, you know, what's a special tradition in your family or what's the weird thing in your house that if your house were burning down, you would rescue and nobody else would even think of it. Like, these are the kinds of questions that will get people revealing. They're, you know, like, well, I've got this stuffed frog that I got at a county fair when I was 9 and I still love it.
Of course.
You start to see how tender and wonderful people are. They really are. And we're so alike. I mean, if you took everybody of every skin color, size and shape, stripped us all naked and put us on the universe's biggest football field and squinted, you would not be able to tell us apart. We look so much more alike. Men, women, children, all of us look so much more alike than we do different.
Absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
And we get all hung up on this, you know.
Maybe you need to be the person to solve peace in the world with this exact point, because it's so true. Bridges. Understanding each other, figuring out what we have in common, what makes us alike, not different. This is the key to everything. Like, it's so true. It's so, so true. You also write wonderful poems throughout the book, beautiful poems that you've written. And I love the one that says, "All you want for Christmas is you." Can you tell us just a little bit about that? Because that's so important and beautiful.
Yeah, I think sometimes we have misplaced goals. We have misplaced aspirations, you know, where we think that, you know, this external thing is going to make us happy or that external thing is going to make us happy. And we know from experience that, in fact, it kind of doesn't. And sometimes it kind of makes things worse because you worked so hard to get this thing you thought would make you happy and kind of here you are, still are. And I think, again, coming back to the 15 minutes a day thing, when you give yourself time to do things that are important to you, that matter to you, that let your light shine in the world, that's the greatest gift you can give to the world. And I know, Judy, I can hear it. People, you know, are like, oh, 15 minutes a day. Sure. But, you know, it's selfish. It would be selfish of me to spend that time.
Right. You're right.
On myself, on my whatever. And what I want to say is opposite. What is really selfish is you showing up exhausted and stressed out and with no sense of humor. And the rest of us have to deal with you like that. Yes. That's selfish.
Yes.
You show up calm, rested, creatively fulfilled, with a little light in your eyes. You're less reactive. You're a better listener. We love that version of you. Please be that person.
Be that person. I was so excited when I saw that you talked about purpose, that you devoted a whole little section to purpose in the book, because that's, again, what this show's all about. Finding your bliss, finding your purpose, your calling, your dharma, your enlightenment, your why, all those words. And you talk about how important it is. I think you've just sort of spoken to this already, being the best version of yourself. But you just say something about purpose and how it's so true. When you're living on purpose and in purpose, and it's based on an internal thing, not an external thing, suddenly you are your best version. You show up as your best version. You make life better for the people around you. And you also give permission to other people to go find their purpose so they can be the same, and so on and so on and so on.
That's right. And I think this life purpose thing, I don't know, it got a little hijacked and distorted somewhere along the line, because I think the true purpose of life, if somebody says, you know, what is my life purpose? The true purpose of your life and everyone's life is to experience your life. Your job on this planet is to experience your life on this planet in whatever way you can. And some of us have physical restrictions that allow that experience to be quite limited or quite brief in our external thing, but it's still that person's full experience of life.
Yes.
So to allow yourself to fully experience life and to remember that life is made up of so many little moments, you know, that first smell of the breeze when you get to the beach and that salt smell and you go, oh, I love the beach. Like, that's life, you know?
Yes,
a little
yes.
kid giving you a little sticky hug, that's life.
yeah.
You know, that morning toast and tea, that's life. These yeah. are the things that make our days are made up of moments.
Yeah.
And so to just lean into your true experience of your life and making sure that at least some of these are things that really matter to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're also referring right now to the micro blessings. What a beautiful way to describe it. And you have a list of all the micro blessings. What's one of your biggest ones? We're going to find out more about what they're all about after this short commercial break. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
The thoughts and opinions expressed on Finding Your Bliss belong solely to the host and guests on her show.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740, and I'm here with Sam Bennett. And Sam, I was asking you right before the break what some of your favorite micro blessings are.
I live with three cats, and I am so endlessly flattered by any attention they pay to me. And they're very affectionate. It's not like I live with standoffish cats. But I can't believe it that this whole other species wants to sleep next to me and be patted by me and look me in the eye and give me those cat blinks. You know, it makes me swoon every time.
I've got a great book for you, Sam.
Yes.
A great book for you by our Senator Pamela Wallin, who was a huge anchorwoman in Canada. It's called Cats, True Tales of, and Olivia will tell you this at the end of the show, but basically she does a history of cats. She talks about her beloved cat that got her through many things, cancer, divorces, problems, breakups, difficulties, joys, ups, downs. And quotes about cats. And I want to tell you something. I'm not really a cat person, but I became one. I wanted to get a cat after reading her book. So we'll get you all the info about that, because what a lovely little book.
I'll look You'll it up. It. That sounds amazing. Yes,
yeah, I love it. So good. I want to talk for a minute about clutter, because we all have the drawer. We all have the cupboard. We all have the house. Recently, I had cataract eye surgery.
Oh, wow.
And suddenly I could see without contacts or glasses. After not seeing at all. And I went, good God, there's a lot of clutter. It really, I didn't see it as much. I'm serious. Yeah. And I went, oh boy, it weighs you down, you say. And you have a great take on how to deal with it. And I'd love you just to tell us about it, and also tell about where you have these exercises in the book to take 90 seconds to draw the clutter. And you suggest using stick figures, shapes, scrawl. It doesn't have to look pretty, but it's a way to see what feelings come up and what comes up for you. Can you talk more about just clutter and then how you can draw it to really get what your version of clutter is?
Yeah, there's a couple of things here. I mean, one is I think clutter gets a little hyper-demonized. You know, I don't really care if you lived in a perfecty-schmerfecty house. I don't care how much stuff you have. If you like your stuff, I think you're allowed to like your stuff.
Yeah.
Where I start to get concerned is, because I'll back up even further. What I love is anything that expands your understanding of who you are and your place in the world. Anything that starts to restrict your sense of yourself and your place in the world, I get a little skeptical about, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you look at your clutter and go, awesome, I love all this stuff, and you feel free and easy and you have people over and you get to live the fullness of your life, I say, great. Other people want, you know, my sister is always saying that I have a much higher tolerance for visual noise that she does, which means she is super perfecty. Her house is organized to a T. Mine is a little, I'm a little more casual.
Your books look very nice there in the background.
I have a lot of perfection books.
You know what I mean? Order. Let's say order.
I have a lot of books and they are pretty orderly. So that's my first check-in. It's like, is this actually a problem? Right?
Yes.
If it is, if you look at your clutter and have that ugh feeling, right? That's your sign. Ugh, great. So that's stuck energy, right? I don't mind having a lot of stuff as long as it's in flow. I've got a giant pile of paper on my desk, but it's in flow. I go through that pile a couple times a week. Like, I know what's in there and not in the mysterious, like, I know where everything is. I just, do you? Is it in the first one or two places that you look? If it's in the first one or two places that you look, I think you're fine. More than that, I'm going to call bullshit. So if you think of it in terms of energetic flow, right, where is this? And I love this 90-second doodle exercise. I recommend this for so many things. Oh. Just get a piece of scrap paper, an index card, I don't care, a piece of paper. And yeah, just spend 90 seconds drawing what is the feeling of the clutter? Not even what it looks like, but what does it feel like? And stick figures, nobody's ever going to see it. This isn't about making art. It's just about getting what you are feeling out onto a piece of paper so you can look at it and go, oh, wow. Okay, I drew me with a mountain on top of me. Shoot, right? And then go into the other side. Spend 90 seconds doodling. How would you like it to feel?
Nice.
What is your fantasy? What would be wonderful? And you go, ah, okay, here I look. I just put this one single line and me floating on a cloud. Oh, okay. Well, now how can we get to there?
Yes.
And again,
nice.
15 minutes a day. Don't try to clear all the clutter all at once. 15 minutes. Just do this part of this closet, this part of this drawer, this part of the garage. Just do little bit. I'm telling you, you'll get there.
That's very cool. There's so much in here. I really mean it when I say, because I know we're coming towards the end and I just have to do a few. Oh my gosh, there's just so much stuff. I'm not going to go into this one, but something to read about everybody in the book is when you talk about how every single person on earth is here to be your spiritual teacher. Mm. And if so, what are they teaching you today? That was brilliant. Tools for calming down. And you give so many great suggestions, the 4-7-8 breathing, which I'm a big fan of, to staying in the present moment. And also you suggest that people check out Byron Katie's explorethework.com in like a sentence or less. What is explorethework.com?
Yeah, thework.com is the work of Byron Katie, who's a spiritual teacher whom I love. And her husband, Stephen Mitchell, is my favorite poet and translator. So they're my own little nerd power couple. She asks, for whatever's troubling you, she only has four questions. Is it true? Yeah. Right? So this person hates me. Is that true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? How do you feel when you think the thought? And what if the opposite is true? Mm-hmm. So this person doesn't like me. Is that true? Maybe, maybe not. Can I absolutely know that it's true? I guess not. I mean, I feel like it is, but maybe not. How do I feel when I think the thought this person doesn't like me? Ugh, I feel sad. I feel hurt. I feel like a seventh grader who's the dork. Ugh, I feel awful.
Yeah.
Who would I be if I never had this thought? Like, what if the opposite is true? This person loves me, or I don't like this person. Oh, maybe that's true, right? So she just has some wonderful devices to like unscrew your thinking, because we have so many habituated thoughts, so many unquestioned thoughts, so many things that we just assume, or we made a decision about 20 years ago and we haven't looked at that decision since. Yeah. And she has some wonderful tools to just help unscrew just a little bit and get you to move forward just a little bit.
You talk about what happens when you write a list of things you appreciate yourself and miracles start to happen. Just briefly on that. Because that's lovely.
It's the same thing. You know, I think this, we get a lot of this like, oh, you should love yourself. Oh, you should approve of yourself. Oh, you know, Stuart Smalley, which by the way, Smalley Saves His Family is one of those great movies that is not anywhere near perfect, but it is a great, great film.
I'd love to see that.
It's really good. Especially if you have any experience in 12-step, it's a great film.
Awesome.
But what are we approving of? Mm-hmm. What are we, this... You know, oh, I'm beautiful. I'm extraordinary. I'm magic. I go, girl. I'm a goddess. Like, I don't know. I can't get there. That's too far for me. But like, I appreciate the chipmunk when he comes out from his hole, the one who lives under my house. Like, I take a minute to go, hey, chipmunk, sup? Yeah. Right. I like that about myself. Like, what are the little things about you that you genuinely can love and appreciate and just nurture yourself that way in the same way that maybe you wish you had been nurtured by others?
Brilliant. Give it to yourself, even if it was never given to you.
That's right.
Fill your cup. And you give so many ways that you can do that. How is it possible that we can change our whole world in just 15 minutes a day?
Because that's the only way the worlds get changed. Everything happens in 15-minute increments. You can't sit down and write a book right now. You can't sit down and lose 50 pounds right now. You can't raise amazing children right now. Mm-hmm. You can only spend 15 minutes bringing those things into increased existence to the extent of your power, right?
It's so brilliant.
It's sort of a way of just saying, get real with yourself and try to, yeah, string together the joyful 15 minutes so that your life, you don't have to change jobs or marry a different person or start dressing differently. You can still just be you, you know. Personal development doesn't have to be a big transformation. It can be a very small transformation, but those ones are, but they can be, it can be so profound, so profound.
So profound. And you're giving permission for people to do it. It's almost like, I can't explain it, but you unlocked something in me when I was reading this that was a little bit stuck, because I always think of these things as too huge. The book is too big. Mm-hmm. Doing the weights, because I have a long way to go with these upper arms, is too big. You know, they are big and I've got to work on them. And the 15 minutes makes it doable. It's so simple and so beautiful. And then you give us suggestions and great tips and tricks and techniques and actionable steps to do it. Like, it's fabulous. What do you hope that readers will take away from your book? Maybe that. I don't know.
Yeah, really just that. Put yourself back on your own list. Spend your 15 minutes a day. Every single day, before you check your email, because we all know when the minute you check your email, it's all over, right?
Yeah. Forget it. Or scroll, or go on your phone and scroll on and on and on, which can last way too long.
So, and I would love this to be like a thing in businesses. I would love corporate America to say, like, hey, you know what? Between 7:45 and 8 a.m. is now, or between 8 and 8:15 or 9 and 9:15, that's now your 15 minutes. Don't check your email. Don't try to get caught up on your to-do list. Don't put finishing touches on the proposal, and don't make the doctor's appointment. This is not about checking things off your to-do list. That needs to get done. You'll do it. It's fine. But what are the things that really light up your soul that you can do? Mm-hmm. And I would love to, and again, I think it leads to greater well-being, greater courage, greater compassion, and more fun, for Pete's sake. Let's have some more fun.
So I have a little challenge, a little pitch for corporate America and corporate Canada. Every company that cares about your employees, and I know you all do, get a copy of this book for everyone in your company and start the 15 minutes a day. That would be great.
And then tell me what happens. I'm so curious.
One last question for you that we ask everyone. So, of course, we're going to ask it to you is, what is bliss for Sam Bennett?
Being in the ocean.
What about it?
The feel of the water on my skin. I don't care how cold it is. I don't care what the weather's like. The smell of the salt, the floating, watching the sky, seeing my toes float up. I used to live by the beach in Southern California. And one time I was out swimming and the head of a seal popped up about 5 feet from me. And we just looked at each other wait, what?
That's so cool.
And that there's this whole, most of the world is water. Most of the world is ocean. This planet doesn't belong to us. It belongs to them. Mm-hmm. And to remember that there's this whole world happening underneath the water that we know nothing about. We know more about the moon than we know about the bottom of the sea. And I just think it's so tender and beautiful, and it's so restorative. And Isaac Dennison, who's one of my favorite authors, has a great quote. She says, the cure for anything is salt water, tears, sweat, or the sea.
Are you going to write another book about this? Maybe fiction, maybe a play, maybe a screenplay?
That's very interesting. You said that. I actually have written the book to a musical that's doing quite well, called In a Booth at Chasen's. That's a lot of fun. And I do kind of want to write a play. That's interesting you say that. I've sort of been noodling around with an idea for a play, so...
Nice.
I'll keep you posted.
Well, I've got to send you my daughter. She's a beautiful actor.
Please do.
I want to send her to you.
Oh, please. Theater kids, stick together.
Stick together. What is the best way for people to contact you, Sam, connect with you on social media, on LinkedIn, and of course, to get a copy of your beautiful book?
So the book's available everywhere. Barnes & Noble just picked it up, which is amazing. But all the resellers, your local bookstore can order it for you if they don't already have it. We love to support our independent booksellers, but otherwise the online booksellers have it. And you can get it on Audible. I did the audio recording myself, so that's fun.
And excellent.
Kindle.
That's going to be good. I'd love to hear that.
That's a lot of fun. Amazing. And yeah, even me when I was reading it, I was like, this book's not too bad. All right. and you can find me at therealsambennett.com. And I'm the real Sam Bennett on all the socials. But what I'd really love is if you come to the website and join my email list, because that's really how I communicate. Like, I try to remember to post stuff on social, but other people mostly do it for me now, and I forget to tell them what I'm doing. So email is my favorite way to stay in touch, and you get poems and recipes and all kinds of fun stuff. And you can write me back and tell me what about your 15 minutes, and we can be pen pals and best friends, and it'll be great.
That's fantastic. Well, I have to tell you, this has been absolutely delightful. So thank you for being on the show today, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me. What a treat. I really appreciate it.
It was great. Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Sam Bennett who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to hear from you. We also love to feature singers, songwriters, or musicians on this show. So if you're a singer, please reach out to us as well. Are there any guests or topics that you would love us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Just write to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I can help you gain clarity, find your passion and purpose, get unstuck. All you have to do is reach out to me at findingyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And all you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Sam Bennett, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Olivia Weatherall, associate producer Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yanuzziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.